Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small-town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country. There's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Life on the Illinois Prairie. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. If you've stopped by this episode today, you might find it a little bit different than some of the episodes we've done up to this point, but I want to discuss something that I think affects us all and things that we maybe do not think about and just not aware of at any given time, sometimes with our busy lives. But a few weeks ago, the state of Louisiana decided that it was necessary to post the Ten Commandments in schools. And many people do not really agree with that ruling. And the Humanist Commitments Organization has a list they call the Ten Commitments. And it's living humanist values. And, you know, those of us who are all, we're all human beings. We think differently. We're raised differently, but, you know, we interact. We have to interact with one another, or we should. And so I'm going to spend today's episode discussing the Ten Commitments and my understanding of the Ten Commitments. And the first one I want to discuss is something that I don't know if it has to be learned. I don't believe it does, but it's empathy. Empathy. And I will consider other people's thoughts, feelings, and experiences. Now, in today's climate, that's a tough one because you've seen them and I've seen them. I'm sure people walking around with shirts that say, well, let's for the lack of the word that I can't use and won't use, let's just say that it says, screw your feelings. But you know it's the F word that they're using on a t-shirt, out in public, or on a flag. You know, how callous, how cold can you be to wear something like, and clueless, to wear something like that out in public where little, innocent, sweet children could see it? I mean, do they wear that and run into their, if these people attend church, and many of them seem to have that connection for whatever reason, but you wear that proudly out in a public place where you're going to run into your grandmother, your preacher, your neighbors? I mean, how appalling. How appalling is that? And how clueless can you be to not realize? I mean, I know our society has gone down a rabbit hole in certain areas, but that, if you have no sense of decorum and no self-awareness, it's bad enough when people go into a place in their pajamas and house slippers. And maybe they're only modeling the behavior they saw of their parents. And this is not a generational thing. It cannot be. All generations must possess a certain amount of common sense and, as I said, self-awareness. And to take it to that level of lack of concern for other people's feelings, I mean, if you're talking about politics, you know, politics is one aspect of life, but, you know, if you're going to say that about your feelings, what if if the person wearing that shirt is the person who gets in an accident or rolls their vehicle on the highway? You know, do you stop? And if you're the person who stops to help that person, or you're the EMTs that go and help that person? I mean, if everybody felt that way, what have we become? What have we become? You know, we have to get outside of that lack of caring for each other. It's hard for me to understand because I'm an empath. I feel other people's pain very deeply, and I refuse to normalize that kind of thing. And to think that a little child can see those things, and to think that a child who's not raised like that would see those words and see that and say, the hell with your feelings. That's just such an appalling thing to me. And then to think that that person wearing that shirt has someone at home. They have children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and they're teaching that kind of thought. I mean, I find it totally abhorrent to me that anyone with any kind of social conscience would wear such a thing. And if they truly believe in what they're promoting, you know, heaven help them if they need help in an emergency. I just don't know. You get back into this universe what you put into it. And the same people that I've seen, again, that lack of empathy, I follow Governor Pritzker. I live in Illinois. Governor J.B. Pritzker. He posts has a Facebook page, and I follow his posts. And the other day, yesterday, he was on the 4th of July, 2 years ago, there was a mass shooting at a suburb in Chicago. And he was acknowledging that and giving sympathy and thoughts to the people whose lives were affected, the people who, family of those who died, young children shot down in a mass murder. And there were people leaving laughing emojis and people just saying the most horrid things. Now, I grant you, there, some of these are internet trolls, and there are bots. There are bots that are set up without real people behind them that just throw out the ugliest, nastiest, most hateful comments they have just to stir us up. And I'll be the first to admit sometimes it works. But other times I will look and see the source and just block that individual because they're certainly not worth my time and they're not worth your time. But I can't imagine sitting in my house and having nothing to do but waiting for somebody to post something online and then just throw out the most hideous thing that you could say to another human being. You would not turn to someone. We go to concerts. We can have 100,000 people or 20,000 people, 30,000 people in a concert venue. You're all there apparently because you like the person performing enough or the group performing enough to see that person. We all have that common interest. So would you turn to that person in the seat next to you and call him a fat bastard? I mean, you might try it one time, but I'm pretty sure it wouldn't fly. So how can we do this online to other human beings that we don't even know and then sit next to people that you know you have a common interest with them because you disagree about one thing, and it might be a big thing, but you know you can put yourself in the other person's shoes. That is what empathy is. It's feeling what they're feeling. And I posted a thing this morning on Facebook that I had seen. I posted it in 2020. It was a teacher named Mrs. Elliott. And she wanted her third grade students to understand what discrimination was. And so she divided them up. And first she had the blue-eyed children were the chosen children. They were the ones that got all the goodies and they got treated well. The brown-eyed students, they had to wear a collar, and they were treated differently. They had less time at recess. They were treated like they were less than, and that they were stupid. And then the next day, it was reversed to where the brown-eyed students were the chosen one, and the blue-eyed students were the ones who were discriminated against. And she said she saw those students change in 15 minutes from well-behaved, sweet, kind to each other students to hateful. And it was such a powerful experiment to see how normal people can change. And That's just such a, it was an enlightening experience. Those children learned what discrimination is. And I don't know, I just find it very, very troubling in this present situation that we're in. But I've seen other pages that I follow. You would not say those things looking somebody in the eye, sitting 2 feet from them. You would not say those hate-filled things that people say to one another online. And it's a hideous thing, and it's so out of control. But empathy, the concern for another human being. I mean, if we totally lose that, we've lost everything. And I can't help but think that, you know, I have so many friends that have wonderful caring empathy. I mean, we love our animals. We love people that we're not related to. We have our friends. We have our circles of relationships. And empathy is just a quality that cannot be underrated. You have to consider, you need to consider other people's thoughts, feelings, and experiences, because we're all different. We've all traveled a different path. And that's how we learn and grow and change and evolve, by seeing what other people have been through and what they've gone through and learning. I mean, you read a book. That's what books are. That's what movies are. That's what plays are. That's enriching your life. And you know, these people that have such a, if their life is just one note, just one thing, if all you see is hatred and no hope, then that's all that you, that's how you live your life. And I think it's extremely, extremely sad. So then, moving on from empathy, is environmentalism. And that is, I will take care of the earth and the life on it. And that's a huge one too. And there again, there are people who poo-poo the idea that there's climate change. How you can, with all the terrible, destructive, catastrophic weather events that happen all across this world, is beyond me how people can stick their head in the sand. But people have been preaching about environmentalism for decades, and now we're reaping the results of ignoring that to a certain extent. And we had a wonderful guest on Life on the Illinois Prairie last year, Sarah Livesey from Grand Prairie Friends. And she explained the many benefits and accomplishments of having volunteers at their many events and their daily activities. It's one way to help save the environment. And recycling is another. Things like buying used furniture and used clothing is another way to reduce the manufacturing and delivery shipping footprint, and to keep things out of landfills. You know, the more we can reuse things and repurpose them instead of just having a constant stream of consumerism and buy, it's not good for the environment in any way, shape, or form. And we only got this one shot. We've only got this one environment, and to see the things that, you know, this destructive fires and things. I mean, I live, you know, living here in central Illinois, we don't, you know, we have occasional flooding sometimes, and we'll have a tornado, we have some weather events, but we do not have the hurricanes and these things, the wildfires, and things that are absolutely devastating to people's lives that you cannot, you know, you might get out with your life, but everything that you work for and everything, you know, your community is gone. So saving our environment is a very important thing. And that's the second one of the 10 commitments. Ethical development. I struggle with that one. Ethical development. It is, I will always focus on becoming a better person. Oh boy, how I struggle with this one, and I'm sure I always will. If you ever heard my 16-part Unknown Sister series, you know how imperfect I am. I am one of those extremely imperfect human beings, and I will be the first to admit it. But I do possess self-awareness. And when I was dating Waldo Conley, after the Mike Ahmed and Joel Dexter years, I had a dispute with his daughter, Sandy, and I wanted to talk to her about it. She flat refused to talk to me about it, saying, "I never look back. I never look back. I always look forward." And I thought, wow, you never look back. How do you possibly grow and learn and evolve if you don't spend some time in looking inward and being introspective? I don't mean you have to lose yourself in the past and get stuck there. But in order to understand things, sometimes you have to look at yourself under a microscope. And that's exactly what I had to do in order to recover and move forward after the Mike Ahmed mom, dad debacle that happened to me. If we never look back, how do you learn from the events of history? I mean, how do you grow? And how do you ever? I just found that a very limiting way to think of your life. And I don't mean that you have to 100%, you know, live in the past or focus on all of that. But, you know, if we don't learn from our mistakes and take ownership of them, and I mean, I have such experience, and it's embarrassing. You heard me say in the, if you listen to the Unknown Sister series, it's embarrassing that I married him to help him get his green card. And that's so embarrassing to say, but, you know, I mean, you have to own it. I own it. I did it. I can't deny it. It happened. And so, you know, when people, it's a cleansing thing when you can, own something and say that I'm responsible for what I've done. And you have to examine yourself sometimes. You have to, like I said, you have to examine history and see how important events have affected where we are in today's society. It's just, and I was not surprised that Waldo's daughter did not want to have that discussion, because she was not an introspective person at all, and she was always right. And we're not always right. And she was definitely not the kind of person to take ownership of her mistakes, for certain. And then the next one of the 10 commitments is global awareness. That, you know, we are such, each of us just are such little specks in this earth, on this earth, and that there's so much going on around the world, you know. It says, I will be a good neighbor to the people who share the earth with me and help make the world a better place for everyone. And I have I know there are many more examples, but there are two that come to mind right off the top of my head. Wilmer Otto, who was a guest, he was the very first guest on this show, and he was such a kind man to come on. I love Wilmer to death. He did episodes 1 and 2, and he's such a busy man, and he has business interests over in Ukraine, and he has, besides helping in Ukraine and help them build and expand their agricultural business, Wilmer was in Romania, and he recorded a third episode from Romania, and he was there to help the gypsy children, because they are so mobile still and so nomadic. He was helping them with their education. And when the war broke out in Ukraine, Wilmer's, his lawyer over there, he left his practice to volunteer in the Ukrainian army. And he was killed. And it broke Wilmer's heart. I know it did, because he knew this man personally, and he, you know, a person like, you know, he has global awareness. It's not necessarily about being able to travel out of this country, but if you have had that opportunity, you see how other people live, and you see what we can have and have had in this beautiful country. We got problems, but we have the United states that we should be united. And until you step out, you can't travel. I get that. But you know what? You can watch documentaries. You can see how other people have to live. And another example is my good friend, Beth Tabert. Beth, she's like many, she's we're going to go out and celebrate her birthday tonight, which will be 2 weeks from now when this airs. But Beth has been a good friend for many years. And she got involved through her church and went to Haiti. I believe it's 2018 or 2019. It was prior to COVID. I can't be 100% about that. But she went to Haiti with her church, and they built an orphanage. And I believe there's a limited number of orphans there. I believe there are 9. But I know that was a life-changing experience for Beth to go and see these children that don't have homes, because Haiti's such a poor country with millions of people struggling to stay alive, to have a life. And then for these chosen people to have this opportunity to go, and for somebody like Beth to go and experience and see firsthand what it's like to live in a country where you don't have, they're so excited to have this school, to have a well, to drink water. The things that we take for granted, global awareness. And I struggle with this one. But trying to deal with people who don't understand that we the world is so big, and so many people these last few years do not think beyond the end of their own nose. They live in a bubble. The world is not a bubble. There are so many people that need, we just need to think about other people. You need to be a good neighbor. If you ever get the chance, if you can't travel, I mean, I get that. I've traveled, but the two countries that I traveled to were highly Americanized countries. I've been to Holland and I've been to Sweden. And I've never been to any place like Haiti or Ukraine or places that are so totally different than this environment. But people just need to open their eyes and see there's a big world out there. It's far beyond you and your t-shirt that says, basically to hell with your feelings, because that's no way to live, and it's no way to prosper, and it's no way to be happy. It's just no way to be happy. And the next on the Ten Commitments is humility. Humility. I will be aware of my strengths and weaknesses and appreciate the strengths and weaknesses of others. And Stacy and I talk about this in regard to our music. As far as our strengths and weaknesses, we're an acoustic duo, and we're most often complimented on our variety of music and our harmonies. We work hard on both of those items, and we rehearse to sound the very best that we can. But we realize our weaknesses for venues. We can't play a busy bar and bring in a big crowd. We're not a Saturday night festival group, or we can't draw those numbers. Those venues want the same thing that I wanted to see when I went out to see a band when I was in my 20s. The quality of the music is not uppermost sometimes to those people. They want to be entertained by the lights and the lead singer coming out on the dance floor and dancing with the crowd and letting the crowd sing into a cordless mic. I mean, I get it. We both do. So we realize that where we fit. You fit where you're we're appreciated, and there are certain venues that draw our demographic, and they aren't in bars from 8 o'clock to midnight. So we work to maximize on our build on our strengths and work with what strengths we have and realize our weaknesses. But humility, oh my gosh, that's a tough one, to realize your strengths and weaknesses. There again, to me, that involves introspection, to look inside and say, okay, I am weak in this area. I when these internet trolls, when I see these people say some of the hateful things they say or stupid things that they post, my instinct is to get in there and give them a snappy response. But then that just fuels them. They want that attention. And I have to tell myself, no, don't give them that satisfaction. Keep your little witty comments to yourself. Don't give them that satisfaction. I was pouring fuel on the fire. So I have to realize, step back. Don't give into that temptation to try to one-up them, because you will never do it. So the next one is peace and social justice. I will help people solve problems and handle disagreements in ways that are fair for everyone. Wow. I've always in my life been, I wasn't the middle child, I was next to the youngest, and I was the only girl, but I've always kind of been the peacemaker. I've always believed in not stirring the pot. I believed in doing that at work, not trying to cause undue hardship or bad feelings among other people. And I finally learned sometimes that keeping the peace is not always the most helpful thing to do, and sometimes a person just has to extricate themselves from a painful situation. But social justice, you know, so talk about all these horrible things. And again, living in a Midwestern area that I do, in a rural area in the central Illinois, we hear about a lot of horrible social injustices that happen. But we're, by the grace of God, not involved in those things at this point in time. But when people are treated so poorly and judged and hated on just because of the color of their skin or how they dress, it's not right. It's not at all right. And it's not acceptable. It is not acceptable. And the fact that, you know, I, as a straight white woman, don't have, at 72, do not have to worry about a lot of things that other people do that have gender identity issues or sexual identity issues or because of their race are judged. It's just not, it's not right. It's not fair, and it's something that we definitely need to work on. It's vital. Responsibility. I will be a good person even when no one is looking, and own the consequences of my actions. Well, this one is huge. To me, this is one of the places where hypocrisy really rears its ugly head. How many people have you seen, and I've seen many of them, who post on social media? They'll post Bible verses and pictures of the crosses, and then interwoven are their hateful political opinions. It's just such hypocrisy to me. Like I was talking about our governor, the hate, calling the governor of our state a fat pig. I saw a post the other day where a kid said to an older commenter, "I can't wait till all of you boomers are gone." Like, what? What a... And if it's a young person, they've learned that from somebody, that kind of hateful, nasty keyboard courage that you would not say to another person face to face. You just wouldn't. The same people who claim to be such good Christians, some people plagiarize the works of others and post them on their own social media, interspersed with their Bible verses. And if you have to have a sign on your vehicle declaring, "In case of rapture, this vehicle will be abandoned," well, I'm not so sure if that's the case. I'm not sure you're going to be one of the chosen ones. And as far as acting as though, you know, when you're doing things that that doing the right thing, even when people are not looking. There are people live in urban areas, and I realize that busy cities, and that's a different world than those of us who live in the country and in a small town that I live in. But in the last few years, with the advent of cell phones, people, again, they don't think beyond the end of their own noses. There's a shortcut. I live in the country, and people take a shortcut from between the little town of Mattoon to a smaller town of Arthur where there are factories. And these people, they'll go 70 miles an hour down the road. They don't care, you know, if you have animals or there's an Amish school across the road from me where people, these children walk to school. Some they drive buggies, but there's nobody there that's older than the eighth grade other than the teachers. So anybody going up and down these roads are young people. And some of the children walk. And when you're going 80 miles down a road or 70 miles down the road, and they don't stop at stop signs. And there's somebody on the other side of that road. And when you're the person on the through street, and you're expecting other people to stop, I mean, these people have to always sometimes be on the street that they're depending on other people to stop. And now we have corn growing up. Again, that's something that people don't think about, that aren't aware of, who live in town. You aren't aware of how dangerous these intersections are. Just completely dangerous. This time of year, I get on my driveway and it's like, you know, you think, okay, get me from point A to point B, because please, safely, we have to stop at every intersection. And even then, you because you don't know if it's a marked intersection or if it's not a marked intersection with a stop sign, it really doesn't matter, because people don't pay attention to the stop signs. And that's not an optional thing. It's not a yield sign. It's a stop sign. It's doing the right thing, even when no one is watching. You know, it's like when a clerk gives you back, and when you get money back, and they count you back, and you get an extra $20 bill. Is the right thing to do to say, "Hey, cool, let's go to Starbucks and get a couple drinks," or is the right thing to do to say to that cashier, "I'm sorry, you gave me back too much money"? Are you doing the right thing when nobody's watching? Because I see too many people. This is so sad to me. Doing the right thing when nobody's watching. I don't have children, so, I mean, it's easy for me to say, but I've seen this last generation, people raising kids and grandkids. And forgive me for this, but I see, and I understand that you want to keep kids occupied. Used to be when I was younger that people would keep the kids occupied by giving them plastic rings with keys on them and that, you know, toys to play with. But anymore, it's all about video games and handing them, you know, phones. And I get it. I mean, I'm not a mother. I know you want to keep these kids occupied. But at the same time, when I see families go into restaurants or they go into any public place, families go in and they sit down and they're all staring at their devices. There's no conversation. There's no interaction. There's no... Why are they even out? I mean, they're not looking at each other. Mothers aren't talking to each other, talking to the children, the parents. They're not talking to each other. Everybody's on their phone. And there's one woman here in town that she claims to be a minister. And she came into a restaurant a few years ago. And she had told me earlier on when I had run into her, she's not somebody I'm fond of, but I had run into her and she said, oh, I'm sorry that I kept you waiting here. And we were at Staples. She said, I'm so sorry. I kept you waiting. And I said, no, I just walked up here. And she said, oh, I just adopted this little, this is my little daughter. I just adopted her, little black girl. And it's like, yeah, she's a beautiful girl. And so this woman, she was very proud of herself for having adopted this little black child. It's a wonderful thing, right? I'm glad for her. I'm glad for the child. I hope she has a good life. But the woman, this minister, when I ran into them in a restaurant later on, a few weeks later, I see she's sitting there on her phone, and the kids are just looking at her. So you can see in their eyes, like, Mommy, Mommy. Look at me. Talk to me. But it wasn't there. It wasn't going to happen because I don't know what this woman was doing on her phone, but the entire time they were in the restaurant, she was not interacting with her children. And so I had a little different view of her adopting that child after that, because I think she adopted her to have a little showpiece instead of a child. Let's see, service and participation. I will help my community in ways that let me get to know the people I'm helping. That's a great one. I love that. Many years ago, when I was married to Joel Dexter, his father was a Lutheran minister here in Mattoon. He's since passed away. They both have. But our church was involved in, we had a food pantry, and we also were involved in delivering peace meals, which at that time they called Meals on Wheels. Now, the food pantry was done through the church. Would the Mattoon Township would contact our food pantry. They would check these people out that needed help, and then we would go and deliver food to these needy families. And we also had a mitten tree. We started out as a mitten tree, and then it evolved into other gifts for needy children. And that was a very, very rewarding thing and an enlightening thing, to go to these homes of people to deliver food in under a variety of conditions, and knowing that, you know, you're helping somebody that was in dire need. And when we would do the mitten tree, usually it was Max Carpenter, a guy named Max Carpenter, lives in Charleston, Illinois now, he and his wife Margie, and he would dress up as Santa Claus, and I was his elf. And so we would go to these homes, and there's a scene from the movie A Christmas Story, where the kids got their Christmas presents, and they got socks, and they just tossed them over their shoulder. Well, I guarantee you, when we went to deliver these gifts to these children through our food pantry, they did not toss the socks over their shoulder. They were grateful for everything that they received. And it was a great experience, and I will never forget it. And also, through Peace Meals, which was, as I said, was then called Meals on Wheels, we'd have a designated time, we'd volunteer, and we would go pick up these meals and deliver them. Everybody had a route, and we'd deliver them. And I delivered to several wonderful people. And the thing about that is that you go in, and some of these folks that you delivered meals to, and they have to pay for these meals, but some of these people, you are the only contact they may have in an entire week. They're shut in. They can't get out. They have different reasons that they need this food. But you sometimes are the only person they're going to see. And until we've walked in their shoes and been a person who is shut in that environment where you cannot get out and know the freedom to come and go as you want, when you have that interaction with another person is so important. And there was one woman, I will never forget her. I will never forget the experience of walking in. It was a hot summer day, and I walked into her house. And she was a very frail-looking little lady, and she was sat in front. She had an oscillating fan that she was sitting in front of, and she had a wet washcloth, and she was holding it over her left breast. And she was dressed, but she was holding this over her left breast inside, like her little house coat. And I said, "Well, hi, so-and-so." I can't remember her name. I believe her last name was White. But I said, "How are you doing?" And she said, "I'm not having a good day." She said, I'm hemorrhaging. And I thought, oh my gosh, oh my God. I said, do you need me to call an ambulance? What can I do to help? What do you need? And she said, "Oh no, honey, it's okay." She said, "It's okay. I'm dying of cancer." And I mean, I just stood there in total shock. And she said, she could see the look on my face that I was trying to absorb what she was telling me. And she said, "No, honey, it's okay." She said, "I'm a nurse." And I was diagnosed with cancer a couple of years back, and she said, I decided not to have treatment. And she said, this just happens every once in a while, and this is, she said, I'm resigned to what, you know, whatever, you know, however the end of my life will come, I'm okay with it. Oh, I was so taken aback, I did not know what to do, other than, you know, admire her strength and her courage, and to be thankful to God that I was placed in that place to get to know that woman and to know her courage and to know her strength and to know her, that she had that freedom to make that choice. And it was an amazing experience, and I'll never forget it. But, you know, if had I not chosen to try to help those in my community, I would never have had those experiences with the people that needed help with their food and with Christmas gifts. And I would never know the joy of helping people who needed it's just that one person to come and give them some validation and some comfort. And I went back to see that lady every once in a while, even after, you know, when she, off the clock, so to speak, when I wasn't delivering mobile meals, because it was just it was a rewarding experience, and I hope it was rewarding to her too. But you know, I'm going to stop at this point. In the next episode, I'm going to focus on the rest of these 10 commitments and focus on volunteerism, which I think is a massively important thing in today's world. It's something that's really, really taken a nosedive, and we don't realize how important volunteerism is in our world. I want to thank you for stopping by today, and I appreciate that those who have had feedback. I love you guys. I appreciate it. And please go to my Facebook page. And if you'd like to leave a positive review, I'd love it. And please come back and please share this with your friends and family. And please be kind. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates. I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Until next time.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.